Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Jazz, the host of the Locked On Jazz podcast, and more importantly, the best friend of Ricky Rubio, David Locke. How are you doing?
I'm good. I had a great sit down with Ricky. I'm sure Timberwolves fans know him well, but I did an extended sit down with him the other day. What an incredible young man. Really was impressed by him, his journey, his story. Really excited to follow him.
Yeah, and he offered a pretty exciting spark for you guys on the court last night. But first, you got to sit down with him, obviously, and that episode is available on Locked On Jazz. I suggest everybody go out and listen to it. It was a really great listen, just to get to know somebody who's new to the roster. But it was a great interview. Guys had a good back and forth right away. But what does he offer the locker room first before even getting onto the court?
Well, I mean, I think this is the same thing that I learned from everybody who I talked to in Minnesota about him, and that is just this incredible seriousness to the craft that he's really is very interested in being terrific.
And so obviously great presence off the court, great locker room presence, but on the court too. Last night he finished with 9 points, 10 assists, really great job distributing by him. What does he offer for the shooters around him? How is he going to help this offense despite the loss of a Gordon Hayward that the team had last year?
Assists are a funny thing, right? You have a hard time really figuring out how often is it an assist that nobody else would have got, what's the value of it, all of those kind of things. Well, I went back last night and looked at his 10 assists. The two things that jumped out to me were, one, a bunch of them happened in transition. Three of them happened in transition. The Jazz were the slowest pace of play team last year. They just did not have a transition game at all. Not that they didn't have much of one. They didn't have one at all. So they go get three possessions a night from Rubio that are transition. That's going to be a really big deal. That's going to help them out a great deal offensively without Gordon Hayward. The other thing, and maybe you guys are really used to this, having watched him as much as you have, but it's the subtleties. So there's a play in which he ball fakes the pass to Gobert, who's rolling to the basket, and then swings it to the far side corner. But that defensive player took two steps toward Gobert, so now Joe Ingles can drive the baseline, who's not particularly quick, but he now has an angle on the defender, and get a layup. And without that ball fake, that play doesn't happen. That on three of his 10 assists, there's a subtle ball fake that freezes the equivalent of the free safety and allows the passing lane to be better used. And that's something where I think his feel, and I'm just learning, and you guys know Rubio much better than I do. But to me, that jumped out at me a little bit, like, well, maybe this is a case of where this is his value, and I'm beginning to understand what's special about Ricky Rubio.
No, you're absolutely right. I've been documented on the show. Tom calls me a Ricky Rubio hater all the time. I've never been in love with his shot, but I've also never had a problem with his passing ability. And you're absolutely right. Some of the stuff he does is just those little things that are not only going to get the player the ball, but they're also going to set the player up for a really successful look at the basket, right? They're going to give him a really good shot to succeed with the ball, not just getting him the ball. And I think that's a really big difference that maybe not everybody notices in a point guard, but Ricky Rubio definitely shows on the court.
You know, we only had Joe Ingles getting 10 assists in a playoff game last year. We've had so few guys that have 10 assists, I didn't even know what it was like to have 10. So that's why I went back. And I didn't really realize when it was going on that he had tinnitus. Well, one, I didn't have a stat monitor all night, so that was part of it. Play-by-play problems. But that's what jumped out to me a little bit there, was that there was this – that I wasn't that aware of the fact that he had notched those assists. And by the end of the night, 9.5 rebounds, 10 assists, it's a pretty impressive box score line. The starters struggled badly in that game because right before tip-off, Rodney Hood was unable to go. And when he couldn't go, Donovan Mitchell got thrown into the starting lineup and kind of discombobulated everything. So that I think prevented the Jazz from kind of having the rhythm that you might want them to have in that game. After they got into their rhythm, then everything was much better. So the plus minus numbers for the starters may be a little misleading.
Well, and for a rookie, I thought he did fairly well. Obviously, like you said, not the same effect as if you have the starters in that you think you're going to have. But for the first game for the rookie, I thought he did decently well. What were your thoughts on Mitchell?
Yeah, you know, he's a rookie. You guys had one of the great number one picks of the draft in Andrew Wiggins with all the skill in the world, and I still think he had a poor shooting year his first year. So, you know, he's going to shoot 38% or something this year. That's what rookies do. The question is, can his defensive energy and his pizzazz and all this, he's got just a zest to him. I think he's going to be fine, but he's going to have a tough year. He's a 2-foot jumper in the lane, and so he has a hard time getting that shot off. But on the other end, he's pretty special. He can get that jumper off, and as the year goes on, he's just going to get better and better and better. I'm not worried about him at all. He's a special kid.
After watching the game and then going back and looking at some of the numbers, one of the things that jumped out to me were points in the paint. They beat the Nuggets 54-36, and the Nuggets are supposed to be this pretty great front court team with Paul Millsap as a new addition and Jokic as one of the stars in the league at center for them. How good was it that the Utah Jazz were able to beat them out in supposedly the area that the Nuggets are supposed to be really good in, and what does that say about Gobert?
Well, early in the game, Jokic pulls out and it causes Gobert and the defense some problems, but that's exactly it, Colton. You've got it 100%. That is the essence of it, and that is that Gobert denies you in the middle of the lane and makes it very, very difficult for you to get in there. And so Gary Harris, who is kind of he's one of the best money ball players in the league, he's either a three-point shooter or he gets shots at the rim. I don't know if he got a shot at the rim all night. And Gobert just takes away that aspect. You had Gobert and Favors, and now Epe Udo, who probably people have forgotten, but really had a great defensive game last night. And you suddenly are taking away the middle of the paint, and it makes it difficult. It'll be interesting against Minnesota, who doesn't have a great ability to stretch the floor, any really good three-point shooting other than Cat, of what happens. Now, Cat will be able to pull Rudy out, and so that makes things tough on the Jazz, unless – I wouldn't be surprised if Gobert didn't guard Taj Gibson and Favors guarded Cat.
And so going into a little bit of the Timberwolves matchup, do you see that Gobert's same effectiveness just as far as the scoring, or do you think that maybe those points are going to have to come off the bench again? You saw Burks and Johnson do a solid job off the bench for Utah. Do you think that they'll need to rely on the bench heavily again just because they'll be playing a little out of position the way guys like Towns play?
Well, I think the Jazz are just going to be a 12-man collective crew all year. Like, I just think that's who the Jazz are going to be. I don't think there's a great mystery to that. They're, you know, Rodney Hood's supposed to be their primary scorer, and he's played what 15 minutes last night, maybe 19 minutes. So that's just kind of who this team is this collective body that is going to. I don't even know if nickel and dime use the right way to say it, but last night is probably the box score if they're going to win games that you're going to see. And so you're talking about Gobert has 18 and Burks comes off the bench to 16, and maybe that 16 is Rodney Hood on another night, and then Favors kind of hovers around 14 and Ingles 11 and Rubio 9, and you know, maybe that 16 some nights is Donovan Mitchell when he doesn't go 3 for 11, but Cephalosha knocks you for 7, and last night it was Hood for 6. And by the time you're done, they've got 106 points on the board, and they're also one of the best defensive teams in the league. What they did defensively to Denver is pretty incredible. Denver was the number one offensive team in the NBA last year, I do think they got less good with Millsap and Gallinari. I think I'm the only one in the world who thinks this, but I'm a big Gallinari fan, and I think he's one of the best offensive players in the league. And I think that they've hurt themselves a little bit offensively, and maybe they aren't going to be as potent. But the Jazz held them to a defensive rating of basically a point of possession, which if you do that all year long as an average, you're the best defensive team in the league. So to do that against the likes of an offense like Denver is pretty impressive.
So you're buying all the Gallinari stock while he's in, while he's playing for the Clippers then?
Well, I think the Clippers are going to be really good, actually. So if the Clippers stay healthy, and I understand if Gallinari stays healthy, is a sentence that should never be ever uttered.
neither should Blake Griffin being healthy.
Right. So the chances, you know, I think they're probably going to be, you know, I think they're probably going to finish, the Clippers are probably going to finish fifth or sixth in the West. But I think when they're healthy, they'll be the fourth best team in the Western Conference.
I would absolutely agree with that. I had them going into the season ranked as probably a fifth seed in the West. One of the things that I think Timberwolves fans...
out of interest, who did you have fourth?
Fourth, I had the Thunder. I had...
No, I don't.
Who do you have it for?
I don't know, actually. I thought a lot about Minnesota, but the one data point I have on Minnesota that has me concerned about the team for the short term is that if you actually combine shot attempts for on your roster, it's the most amount of any team from last year. It's the most amount of any team in the league.
Yeah, they're going to, I think that's the way it's going to stay early too, is they're going to try and win games on offense before that defense develops, honestly.
Let me rephrase that. I don't think I said that correctly. I don't think I made any sense of that. So if you take the average amount of shots each player on every team took last year and just totaled them up so that every player got their average shot attempts. Minnesota has like 120 shot attempts. There's no way that you can't take about 90 a game. So if they're actually to balance out what Minnesota, almost every guy on Minnesota has to take 15 to 20% less offensive possessions than they did a year ago.
Well, and that's kind of the thing that they've been worried about, or people have been worried about the Timberwolves too, is how do these guys complement each other as opposed to detract from each other. And I think that you're just going to have to be really selective. And that's the thing too, is that these guys haven't played before, and you're going to have to see them grow together, not only as a defense but as an offense. And you just got to be selective in what shots you're taking. So if you're Wiggins, maybe you take a few less shots from the perimeter and try to get heated up less from the perimeter and just be really good around the rim, because he was really good around the rim last year. And if you're a guy like Taj Gibson, you saw him take a lot of corner threes both in preseason, and he took a couple corner threes in last night's game against the Spurs. As much as you want to see them stretch the floor, maybe those aren't the shots that he's taking, just because you're right, they take a lot of shots and they're not going to be able to fit them all into one game if they're still popping off as many shots as these guys were taking last year. So maybe you got to see them mold each individually into a certain role as opposed to being as versatile as they're used to being. And I know that versatility is really key in the NBA right now, but you also want every guy to be trying to get some shots, because you don't want them to rely on one or two guys to score all their points.
So let me ask you this. Which guy – I talked to a scout the other day. I'll share this with you. So I was talking to a scout in the league the other day, and his comment was that the teams that he thinks are going to have the biggest struggle early in the year were Denver and Minnesota, not Oklahoma City and Houston like everyone's talking about. He thinks that Denver and Minnesota have too many shots on their roster, basically, and that they don't have players that are ready to give them up. And so the question I would ask you then, I guess, is who on Minnesota is willing to give up their 15-20%? And really, if somebody's not, then who's willing to give up their 30% of their possession?
Well, I think that starts with Jimmy Butler. I think that you have to see him, because you saw for most of the possessions he was taking the ball down the court, and you saw a couple times too where he would drive, and instead of trying to lay it up like I think he did a lot in Chicago, he would dish it out. There was that beautiful play to Wiggins where he drives in, and it looks like he has the guy on him beat. I believe it was Danny Green who was defending him. It looks like he has him beat, and he makes that extra pass to Wiggins for the dunk. I think that's what you see a lot from Butler, is that he's given up the contested layup that I'm pretty sure he can make most of the time, but dishing it over to another guy for him to get the point. So I want to see that, because he's the leader. I want to see him leading this team to success. I don't want to see him being as successful as he was. I think those are two very different things, and because he's the number one guy on this team, that's important. Also from Jeff Teague, I think that he's one of those guys that might have to take a hit. I think you want to see him mostly in transition doing a bunch of things. He shot very well last night, but he's one of those guys where he kind of has to mold his game to be the veteran who is going to help these young guys, because honestly, until the defense catches up with Wiggins and Towns, if they're not taking a bunch of shots, then they're becoming not as valuable on the court, because their defense is still growing. And so when I have a guy like Jimmy Butler who can be a great defensive player, I want to see him get other guys involved and maybe not take as many shots, at least right away in the season.
I'm with you. Let's just watch it. I'm very, 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 very curious. Curious to see how it plays out.
That's one of the great things about this season, right? Is there was so much movement in the offseason. There's a lot of questions that we're looking for throughout this season to be answered, and how specific teams are going to play out. You mentioned the Rockets, and the Thunder for a couple teams, but also teams like the Dallas Mavericks with the new rookie Dennis Smith Jr. Everybody's excited about him. He played really well last night. Just a bunch of teams where you're really excited to watch them play, just because you want to see how these players are going to work together and how these teams are going to gel and mix.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the Jazz are the opposite. Like in the interview, I asked Quinn Snyder, "Hey, what are you going to? Where are you going to get your shots?" So they're this interesting thing where we don't know where the shots are coming from. They're the opposite. Whereas guys are going to have to up their usage instead of decrease their usage. I don't know which is easier. There might be an argument to actually decrease that what Minnesota's got to do, where Jeff Teague has got to decide he's okay taking three less shots a night, and Karl Anthony Towns, who thinks he might be an MVP in this league one day, rightfully so, has to simply take less shots. Yeah, that's the one thing I would say, and maybe I'm going to turn out to be really wrong. Let me clarify, I actually had Minnesota's. When I had got push came to shove, I took Minnesota fourth, so I'm a big fan of where they are. I then pulled out of that a little bit, because taking a team from 31 to 51 wins is unrealistic, even with the evolution of Karl Anthony Towns and the addition of Jimmy Butler. That's just a crazy, crazy, crazy jump. So I wavered a little bit, and I also wavered because I just couldn't figure out who I believed on that roster was going to be willing. I just don't believe Andrew Wiggins, who has not established his value in the league and slows down, is willing to shoot less. I don't believe Jimmy Butler is willing to shoot less. I don't believe Karl Anthony Towns is ready to shoot less. I believe if Jeff Teague shoots less, he disengages. Frankly, Taj Gibson's always liked to shoot an awful lot more than people talk about. He took 11 last night. So I'm pretty curious to watch what happens. I'm a big fan. I think this team's going to be really, really good. And so don't misunderstand what I'm saying. When push came to shove, that's where I had them at fourth, and then kind of backed out a little bit. But that's I'm still, you know, all these comments sound as though I'm like, oh, there's going to be a real problem. I don't think there's going to be a real problem. I just think it's going to be a little bit of a struggle at first.
No, you're absolutely right. And there's going to be – I think it's easy to forget that this team has played just one game together, one real game together, and everybody's really excited because the talent is there. Well, the talent's still got to gel and mix together, right? And as far as shots, I think Andrew Wiggins is one of the guys I want to see shoot a lot. I think other guys are going to have to give up shots, but until that defense catches up for Wiggins, he's going to be worth his money because of the points he puts up. And you saw him put 26 points up last night, and that's one of the ways where he really helps the Wolves, is not only taking shots, but he was really good last night at getting to the line, too. He was drawing all kinds of fouls and got to the free throw line a bunch. And so that's something that I want to see Andrew Wiggins do plenty of, is take shots and score, because I know for a fact he can do that. And the defense may grow. It may come in the next couple months. It may not. But as far as the scoring, he's got that down right now.
Right. Good points. Good points all the way across.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, because I think Timberwolves fans are pretty nervous about it. I know I'm nervous about it. The tendency that Timberwolves post or former Timberwolves players have to come back and really hurt a Timberwolves team in the first game back, especially, is something that is going to be thought by a lot of Timberwolves fans as they see Ricky Rubio enter the building. Do you think it's more important for him to have a really big shooting night and to be kind of like the motivation for this Utah Jazz team to really crush the Wolves? Or do you think it's more important for him to have another 10 assist game?
Don't have any idea, actually, Colton. I mean, I guess there's one answer that would say he wants to shoot well because everyone's doubted his shot for all this time. But I feel like Ricky's bigger than that and wants to play. The thing I'm interested on Ricky, and I think it's great for him that this game is the second game of the year and gets out of the way for him quickly, is, and I tried to talk to him a little about this, but I don't know him great, so he dismissed it and said, no, I still just have to, you know, get better and play hard and do that. But my feeling a little bit was that this is his first chance to be Ricky Rubio in his life. I don't know who that is. But the thought is that, you know, he was thrown into the fire as a 14-year-old kid. He then becomes Justin Timberlake, Justin Bieber of Spain. And, well, he really was, right?
I mean, right. No, you're right. That's one. Just a great way to put it.
Then he comes to the NBA as this, like, pre-legend. And, you know, he was drafted before Steph and just all the... This is his fifth coach in 5 years. Just every single thing of that nature. And I feel like now, does he just get to be him?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's going to be a little bit less weight on him. And maybe that gets transferred over to Gobert a little more. Or I'm not sure, but this is definitely the best situation for him. You also mentioned the coaches he's had. I think in football, people tend to look at like a quarterback and say, oh, well, he's had a bunch of different coaches. How is he supposed to develop in all those different kinds of schemes? Well, it's the same in basketball, whereas if you have a point guard that has all these different kind of coaches that want him to fit in these different boxes, it's going to be tough on him. And I think people tend to think, oh, you just got to go out there and make some passes and shoot the basket and shoot and make baskets. Well, it's not that simple, and that is tough for a point guard to have to try and fit into these different schemes and fit into a different box for each head coach. And I think you're right. Now this is probably – this might actually be the best version of Ricky Rubio that we have seen up to this point now that he's playing for Utah.
Let's hope so. I'm all a fan for that. I think it's – here's the fascinating one I'd leave you with, or I don't know if you have more, you're welcome to, but I'm assuming that I've done my purpose. I can't have any more information that's actually useful. And that is, I found last night's matchup really fascinating between the Jazz and the Nuggets, and I find the same thing with Minnesota and the Jazz. So Denver and Minnesota are elite offensive teams and bad defensive teams, who everyone thinks, well, they'll just become better defensively automatically with the addition of Paul Millsap and Jimmy Butler. The Jazz are an elite defensive team and probably not a very good offensive team because of the fact that they lost Gordon Hayward. It's interesting to me, like, what's better, the third-ranked defense and the 20th-ranked offense, or the third-ranked offense and the 20th-ranked defense? Or are they actually the same? If they are the same, then I would say that the Jazz have been very undervalued in the offseason. I don't know that they're the same. I think offense might be more valuable than defense. But we're going to find out.
I would tend to lean a little more offensive just because there's so many teams where if you're playing a team like the Blazers or the Mavericks, then you can probably live on offense in the West at least. But, I mean, as far as proof, the Jazz are 1-0 and the Timberwolves are 0-1. So the defense is looking very stout, and they're looking to be able to build, at least with Rubio, they're looking to be able to build off of that offense, or off of the defense, excuse me, a little more, because he offers some transition, like you were talking about earlier. He's offering a little more transition off of that defense, and I think that's going to be a real big thing in the Timberwolves game as well, is that the Jazz are going to really clamp down, especially on the interior defensively, and then they're going to try and burn the Timberwolves in transition with some long Ricky Rubio passes. That's something that I'm at least looking for, and that might happen a lot in the Timberwolves game tomorrow.
The Jazz pick and roll Denver to the end of the earth. We'll see if they can do something. So.
And just before I let you go here, just anything around the NBA, any standout performances, anything that you took note of? Obviously, the Gordon Hayward injury was devastating for Boston, but anything positive that stuck out to you when we watched our first batch of NBA games over the last 2 days?
Well, so I only really get to watch, so I can't answer that because I've only watched the first night. I thought both Boston and Cleveland looked awful. Maybe it's because of Gordon's injury. If I was Toronto, Milwaukee, or Washington, I'd be really focused. I think somebody will be the number one seed other than Boston.
Yeah, especially the way, and maybe it's a bad sign if they're going toe-to-toe with the 76ers in a tight game, but Washington looked very good the other night. Otto Porter looked really good. Beal looked good. John Wall was fantastic. One thing that I would have everybody pay attention to, my rookie of the year candidate, Dennis Smith Jr., 10 assists, 16 points. He looked fantastic, very athletic. Keep watching him, folks. Keep watching him. Anything you'd like to plug, David? Any shows coming up or anything like that you want to plug?
Nope, just listen to Locked On Wolves a lot. Thanks to everybody tuning in. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Keep listening to Locked On Wolves. Check out Locked On Jazz. David, thank you for joining me. And this has been David Locke and Colt Molesky on another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
The new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.